Nigeria is that green spot on the map of Africa there. It's on the coast. Okay. Okay. So Nigeria is located on the west coast of the African continent. It has a population of about 180 million. About 60% of the population is under 20 years old. There are about 500 indigenous languages that are spoken in the country. And there are also other dialects that if you come from one end of the tribe, the other end, you won't really understand a lot of words that they're saying. So you can imagine how it is to try and keep a country like that united. Then the country is about 60% Muslim, 10% animistic or pagan, and 30% Christian. They put that in quotation marks because they come under the umbrella of Christianity, but there's all sorts of false doctrines and all of these, there's, what do they call them, prosperity Christianity preachers around. So you can see the arrow there pointing to where Ikko Mission is, kind of in the center. If you go a bit north of that, you'll see Abuja. Abuja is the capital, now the capital of Nigeria. And it's about, well, it takes us about 6 to 8 hours to get there if we're traveling by car. The north, can you go back? You've heard about the Boko Haram and the troubles in Nigeria. Most of the trouble that is being made is up in the northern part. Up around, you see where they have Maiduguri in the right-hand corner up there. Most of it is in that area, bordering on Lake Chad. Once in a while they come down. They've had bombings and explosions in Abuja itself. But there's not so much of Boko Haram around where we are, although there has been for about the past 4 years. A nomadic tribe, the Fulanis, that have wanted to come in, and they've been trying to take the land and kill off all the people in the tribe next to ours, the Agatu tribe. So there have been some horrific raidings of villages and deaths and their houses, everything was burnt. And some of them have come to where we live as refugees. They've come with nothing. The next one, please. So the mission is on a compound. Yes. The mission is on a compound that's owned by a Nigerian volunteer agency which was set up in the early 1950s. Now, my grandpa, Raymond Gibble, went out in 1921, but he didn't have a certain spot or any land there that he could build a mission on. He would go around from different villages, he'd spend a few years here, then he'd spend a few years somewhere else. So it wasn't until around 1952 that we actually got the property that the mission is on today. There are many different ministries operated on the compound. There's just a sign, but it's not very complete. Can I have the next picture, please? It's more complete as to what goes on there. In the mission there, there's a translation work, Bible schools, camps, seminars, and conferences, printing, well drilling, care for orphans, refugees, and widows, the school and the hospital. Next one, please. This is my grandfather. This picture was taken the day that the Igala Bible was translated in the early 1960s. I think it was around 1963. It was the day that he finished the translation, finished the revision, and it was ready to go to the printers. When Grandpa went out there, it was a young man. He felt it was his calling to go out there, learn the language. After he'd learned the language, then to put the language, to translate the Bible into the people's language and let the Holy Spirit move in hearts. Where he landed, it was in the Igala tribe, but we have work in 4 different tribes. There's the Igala tribe, the Agatu tribe, Eloi tribe, and the Bata tribe, and they're all surrounding. That's a picture, it doesn't show very good, but that's an Igala Bible there. It says the Book of God's Word is what it's called. Next one, please. So in the translation work, Grandpa worked on the translation, but the Lord called him home in 1967 before he actually saw a printed copy of the Bible. But since then, my dad and other men have translated Bible study books, hymns have been translated with other scriptures into the Igala, the Idoma, or that's the Agatu, Bassa, and the Loish rites. And that's just, the picture's a bit old, because that's dad in his office there with all of his books and everything around him. The next one, please. These are two of the men that are there working on the translation now. Paul is on the left, and he translates into the Bassa tribe. He's working on some parts of the scripture, and Bible help, like Emmaus courses or other kind of Bible study books, and hymns. And then Joseph on the right, he that works for the Eloi tribe. And after they've translated a certain amount, then they go home and go over what they have done with the elders in the villages around where they live to make sure for accuracy, or just to make sure that what is said is clear to whoever might be reading it. And the problem with the Fulanis coming in and raiding the Agatus, they come through the Eloi tribe, so it also affects them as well. And last week, Joseph sent to me, he said, well, Ma, he said, I went home to see my elders about what I have translated, he said, but I had to leave immediately because there was too much unrest going on there. So that is still going on, and it is still a matter for prayer for those people. The government is trying to do something, but they're not being as forceful as they need to be. This is the Ika Bible School. The Bible School was started in the late 1950s, early 60s, and it's been going on. This was taken when Bible School wasn't in session. They come in every other month. This picture has all the windows closed, so it doesn't look very inviting. But because most of the people, the teachers, it's all volunteer. The teachers come, they will spend a month. Bible School will run for a month. The next month, the teachers and the students, everybody goes home, mostly to work on their farms and to try to get enough food or money for transport or whatever for coming back the next month. The teachers have their families at home that they have to care for as well. Some of the students do. So it runs for every other month. This is just a group of the Bible school students. And the men in the middle there, kind of hard to point them out from here, but anyways, not this row of girls, the men behind them there, are all teachers in the Bible school. It's all run by Nigerian men who felt called, and the elders see that, yes, these people qualify for teaching others, and that they can give of their time they are willing to give of their time to come. Sorry, yes, the next one. Then after you've done your 2 years, if you get through the 2 years, which is really only the first year, but it takes 2 years to do 1 year because of all the months you have off. So after 2 years, all those who have passed, they collect their diploma. And this was at the graduation last year. This man is getting his diploma. Those are a couple of the teachers giving out the diplomas to them. So you have your first year, which takes the first 2 years. Then the next 4 years, you can come and you will finish off with 3 years. They don't have any second year as such. So it's really been wonderful because when Dad was called 3 years ago now, most of the people around, I mean, Dad had been there since 55, although some of them even knew him when he was a child there. But most of the Christians around had always had Dad there at Ika. And when Dad was when the Lord called him, they were just devastated. They just couldn't figure out. They thought, you know, we're lost. What are we going to do? The whole work is going to crumble now because he's not here. And some of the men, they were in my living room one day, and they were talking with me, and they were saying, you know, well, look, isn't there one of your brothers that can come? Or what about your son-in-law? Some of your daughters are married. Isn't there somebody that can come and take Dad's place for us? And, I mean, they knew better. They knew in their hearts better than that. But it was just their devastation, their feeling at the time that made them talk like that. So I said to them, I said, no, You know, God has not called anyone. And unless God calls, if somebody comes and says, you know how many of your people are dying to go over to the white man's country? Somebody comes from there here by force that it's not the Lord calling him. Do you really think it's going to work? They said, oh, well, if you put it that way. They said, but what are we going to do? I said, look, you have been led. You have been grounded in the scriptures. It's time now for each of us to ask the Lord, what can I do? And the Lord has worked, because it wasn't very long after that, especially with the Bible school. Session came in and the teachers came to me and they said, we have a problem. They said, it's not really a bad problem, but we have a problem. We don't have enough rooms for the students to sleep in. They're sleeping, some are sleeping on the floor. Some are outside the teacher's office. There's a little foyer there, and they said, we've got students sleeping in there. There's not enough room to accommodate the students. And, you know, it was wonderful. So then we started working, thinking together and planning. Well, that was about the time that John and Rick had come out for a visit in the end of 2015. So I got them to bring in sand, and the men are making the cement blocks. You can see them on the right there. Next one, please. Then we made some mud blocks because, well, of course, it cuts down on cost. We do the cement blocks for the foundation and then up to the window level, and then we build with the mud blocks. And they're strong mud blocks. Sorry, the pictures aren't very clear, but it might give you a bit of an idea. That was just the building going on, and then they're putting up the roof on the building. Next one, please. The building was roofed, then we had problems. Okay, different problems. Everything stalls in Nigeria. Nothing goes the way you plan, because that was about a year to get this building done. Finally, in December, we were able to get it finished off, got the vent, put the windows in. We got the painting done on the inside. So the inside was fine for them to live in. The outside hasn't been painted. There's still stuff around. But we said, okay. I was so happy when they came in for school in January this year. I said, finally, you have accommodation. There's lots of room inside that building for all of you. That was for the guys. Because just before I came, I said, but we've got an awful lot of girls here. So I went and checked out where they were staying, and they're really very crowded. There's 38 of them just in one building. Anyway, so I said, there's your building. 2 days later, they came back to me, and they said, we have a problem. And I said, oh, now what? Well, my mind never went to where they were going, because it was just a couple of years ago that I did put extensions on some of the classrooms because there were more students. They came to me again and they said, there's not enough room. We don't have enough classroom. The next one, please. Whoops, I missed something. Sorry. No, it's okay. The next one. This one. No, sorry. Go back to the one with the mattresses on the car. Yes. When we got the beds in that, I mean, not the beds. We still have beds to make, and hopefully when Rick comes out in November, we have the metal there for welding beds together for them, but Ben just doesn't have time with everything else he's doing to do the welding. So hopefully when Rick comes out in November, right, Laurie? He's going to do welding. he's picking up on his welding skills. We got mattresses for them, and then when Rick came out, he brought out a lot of bed sheets that they'd got at grad sales and that for Bible school. So a lot of them were big, so we were able to cut them to size, because as you can see, the mattresses aren't very big mattresses. They're only, I don't know what size you call that, about that wide. So we got the bed sheets made for them. So we were set for them. Then the next one, please. They came, they said their classrooms are too crowded, which as you can see from this picture, they are rather crowded in that classroom. So Ben and I got together and we planned how we could put extensions on the classrooms. And we had to do it after they left the end of January, before they came back to the beginning of March. So February was a very busy month for us, trying to get the work, get people to do the work and to get it done fast. Next picture, please. So here are some of the walls going up. We just attached onto other classrooms that were there, and we hope this time we've made them big enough that we're not going to have to do extensions any too soon. Well, the next thing is probably going to come, so we'll have to do new buildings, because there's really not much more in that space where we can extend to. But it was wonderful, really, just to see things progressing like that when they were so afraid. They keep coming to me, they said, and we were afraid everything was going to crumble. I said, and just look what God does. So it's really wonderful. Next one, please. This is more of the walls going up. You can see way in the background there, past that tree, there's another building that we've pulled out the wall this side so that we can extend it this way as far as we can. This one that we brought down, there were trees that had to come down in some places, so we just had somebody come in and cut them up. That smoke is not from a fire, it's from his chainsaw. Rather smoky. Then there's the camps, seminars, and conferences. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. And there is a lot going on out there. A lot of conferences. At the end of every month, there's a Bible reading conference. And it's a couple of the men go through books of the Bible consecutively. And it takes a month to get through because they really go deep into whatever book it is that they're going through. That one now goes from they arrive on a Wednesday afternoon and they leave Saturday afternoon at the end of every month, except for December because of Christmas being in there. Then we have, this is a group of them, people in a conference. They have to meet outside because none of the buildings are big enough and there's a group of people coming. We also have evangelistic conferences that different areas will have evangelistic conferences. Usually, one weekend in the month, the third weekend in the month, is usually for an evangelistic conference. They will meet on Saturday morning. They'll have a Bible study. Then in the afternoon, they'll divide up into small groups, and they'll move around the village with the gospel. We have the women's conference, the annual women's conference, and they take the book, The Woman Who Pleases God, and they study through that one. Somebody takes that book with them, and then they have their individual meetings that they have. They divide up into smaller groups for discussion groups.
So
yes. Oh, there's a lot more assemblies than that, but it's just in the Igala, the Agasu.
What kind of a mile is
it? Oh dear, Aunt Ruth, you do ask me difficult questions.
Some
of them come for hours, and they'll come from other cities, like some from Abuja. They will come from there, or they'll come even from Kano, from up north, even from Maiduguri there, where they're having the fighting up there. They'll come from Lagos. So some of them will travel for 8, 10, 12 hours to get there for the conference, and also for the women's conference, too. And sometimes we usually have between 1,000 and 2,000 women crowded onto the mission field station there. They sleep everywhere. They sleep on the floor for the week. Most of them come with their kids. I did have a clip, but a little video of it just to show you the women just sitting around. Their babies will be sitting on the floor with them. They'll be playing on the floor. They'll be giving their babies biscuits, cookies to eat just to keep them occupied while they're having the meetings. Well, you can see them here how they're sitting. You see the kids on the mat over here. So that's for, we have conferences, different, I'm probably forgetting some conferences, but I don't really have much time and I have too much to say. The next one, please. Yes, camp's coming up. Okay, this is they come in all kinds of, they'll come in the back of trucks or pickups. Some come by bicycle, some even walk to get this. A lot of them come on motorbikes. And a lot of them come, they stand up in these cars. So if they're coming, they may be hours standing up in the back of that truck in the sun to get there for a conference. It's not going to, this is where the cliff is supposed to be and it's not, sorry. This is just pictures of at a conference. The one down on the bottom here is the breaking of bread outside under the trees. It doesn't show it very good, but there's actually a chicken running around underneath the table there. And you'll have dogs going through or goats going through, but it's all, the heart is there. It's the remembrance service. And they covered over the emblems there with something to hold it down. Obviously, there was a breeze around. So, okay, camps. In the early 70s, some of the missionary ladies, actually she's a lady from Britain, Shirley Brown. She started up camps, girls' camps. And they ran it. The girls would come into Ica and they would run it as a camp. The assemblies take care of the feeding of the girls. They take care of bringing the girls in from wherever they were transporting them in from. And then they would be divided up like 10 with, they called her their mother, but it's actually the counselor. And then they had a mother's helper, which was another girl that was there to assist the counselor. So sometime in the 80s it was, the men started looking at this, that the women were doing, having girls' camps. Every year they'd have a girls' camp. And they started feeling left out. They said, well, why aren't we doing anything for the guys? The women are here doing this fantastic work, reaching these girls. We need to be doing something for the young guys. So they started having boys' camps. And first it was just one camp a year, one for the girls, one for the boys. But before you can go and work at camp, I mean, everybody wants to help out in camp. And there's so many people, but the elders have decided, or those in charge of the camps, to have every year they have a camp seminar on counseling. And if you don't come to that seminar, you will not be called to come and work at camp, because they want everything fresh in people's minds. And of course, there are new people coming in that want to help in camp that haven't gone through the course. So every year, anybody who's going to work in camp has to come for a week. This is the men and the women are divided. But there's men over the one side, there's women on the other side of the hall there, and they're in for that week of camp. And sometimes you have between 400 to 800 people wanting to work in the camp. And I said that they had the two camps. So they started thinking, they said, okay, if we can reach 120 girls and 120 guys every year by having a camp here at ICA, what if we decided to have other camps, other areas had camps? We could reach, if we had five boys camps, we could reach five times that many young fellows for Christ, that many girls for Christ a year instead of just the 120. So then they started planning it, and that's the way they're doing it now. There's about, the assemblies run about eight, no, at least 10 different camps. It'd be four girls, four guys in different areas. And they finance the kids there, they're feeding and everything. They're transport there, wherever they're coming from, for a week. Plus feeding all the workers that come. And I saw there'd be a lot of very elderly ladies would come in for girls' camp, sometimes around 30, 40 of them. So one day I said, what do the elderly ladies do? I mean, they can't help with the sports or do anything like that. And they said, no. And it happens with the men, too. They call them the grandparents. And the grandparents come in, and their reason for coming is every time that the kids are in class for Bible study, they are praying. They meet together, and they pray for the session. Okay, these are the camp buildings on the compound there at ICA, but when they have them in the other villages, it's in the holidays, so they find out, they rent, no, they don't rent, but anyways, they ask for permission to use different school buildings to house the kids in, and also to have their classes on the premises. Okay, this is, they have sport in the afternoon. They usually have, first of all, after lunch, they meet with their counselors in their cabins, and they usually have a Bible study, and they can talk, you know, one-on-one more with their 10 campers that they have. Then after that, half of them go for crafts, half of them go out for sports. After that, it's time to come home. You have to go to the gym, get your bath. Then you come back. And this is the kitchen at ICA where they cook for all of these all of these people. Right now, I should have a picture of all the cooks there, but you wouldn't really see much other than cooks. But they have their three stones under that stage. They make their fires, a number of them. They do all their cooking there. Then after they finish, then the animals come around to see what they can scrounge. So you see a goat there and a dog there. And there'll be chickens and ducks running around too for anything that's splashed out. The printing press. One goal of the printing press at ICA is to provide quality, affordable Christian books in the local languages. Printing has been going on at ICA for, I remember, since the even before the 1960s, because the first press they had there, it was, you pedaled it. It was like a bicycle, and it was pedaled, and that somehow operated the press for coming down and printing on the paper. Then it lifted up, and the paper went through, and somebody behind it picked it up or something. But we had offset press. That offset press is, for years and years and years, it was just chugging along, and it was more or less dead, although recently Ben has been able to resurrect it again for a short while anyways. But then the Lord provided for a new refurbished press. Of course, this press got there. It was different than what we've been using, and nobody knows how to use it. No manual came with it. We have tried to get the manual. Ben has, he's sent to the company that made them, and they were not able to find a manual for him because he wants the operator's manual. So Ben's there trying to figure out some of the suction cups were no longer sucking. He had to figure out how this machine sucks. He had to learn how the whole machine operated because he's not in printing. I said, Ben, I said, how do you know all this stuff? He said, Internet, Google it. I said, okay, I'm glad you understand what you Google, because I wouldn't have been able to. But now he's got it so that it runs, and they found out that the fountain solution that they use so that what the ink is sticks where it's supposed to stick or something, they can't get the type that this press uses there. So he now has some, he said he's got three different guys out feeling the markets in Nigeria, the different markets in Nigeria, to see if there is somewhere where they can find the one that they need. He's Googling to see if there's somehow he can do some kind of a concoction or adjustment with the one that we can get so that they can use it. So that's where he's at with the printing now. Next one, please. Oh, sorry. Ben is my youngest son. He went out there to work with his wife, Chelsea. They went out last year. She used to work at an orphanage it's about 30 miles, but it takes at least an hour and a half or 2 hours to get there. Her cousin was there working at this orphanage. Then Chelsea came out and started working at the orphanage. And she and Ben met over a course of time, with a lot of prayer, they decided that, yes, the Lord meant for them to work together. So they came back. They got married 2 years ago. They came out last February, so the both of them are there. This is the press when they did have work to do. They're folding the books, putting them together, putting covers on them. Next one, please. So we have, this is the book store, where we store books for selling. And this is a shipment of Bibles that came in, the Igala Bibles. And they're just offloading them off the van, and then they pack them inside the store here. Those in the back are all courses or study books in one or the other of the four languages. And we also get English books from ETI in Toronto. There's a big demand for that there. These women are in our bookstore there, and these women are in looking at them to decide which they wanted to buy. They go, we take them out to the conferences because you can get Christian books in Nigeria, but they're often all these funny different denominations that don't really have very much sound doctrine to them. So people really like, and we'd like to distribute these to them, and we can get them to them at a very simple price for them that anybody can buy them if they want them. The water and the wells. The purpose of the well project is to help people get good clean water instead of having to drink water from mud holes like the one on the left. They're there to collect that water and take it home for their cooking, their washing, their bathing, whatever. So the goal of this is to use the gift of physical water as a conduit for communicating the love of Christ and the gift of eternal water. And there's, you can be praying, I think it's beginning of May. Tom is supposed to be going into the Bassa tribe to a village there and putting in a well for them. Here's just some more pictures of the kind of water here. They have to wait for it to seep out of the ground, and they scoop it with that bowl into the other ones, put in their basin to take home. Some people have to walk 4 to 5 miles to even find this water in some places. Here's some more, just to show you what nice murky water. They take it home, they let it settle, and sometimes some of that grub... Am I standing in your way? Can you see around me? They leave it settled. Some of the muck will settle to the bottom, and they can take the water off the top, but it's still not very enticing water. I think there's some more pictures too. Yes, this is another mud hole that they go to collect water. And some more. I mean, it's quite, in some areas, that's the only water that they can find, especially during the dry season. Some wells have been successfully hand dug. They just go down it, they'll go down so deep in some of these wells to get water. Others, some has a drilling rig that he will use to drill to get water out. I think the next one, please. Just another one. They're working into the evening because it's cooler, so as long as there's light, they'll be working to try and get it done. Then after it's done, then they have to put the hand pump, attach it to the well, do the cement work, the concrete work at the bottom. Installing a hand pump on one of the completed wells. It's one like this that they're going to be putting in Bassa for one of the villages. Here they are lined up to get their first bit of clean water. Next one, please. There it is, everybody. This girl can't keep her hands out of it because it's just so different from what they're used to having. Then, true religion and undefiled before God and the Father is to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction. Now, when we talk of orphans in Nigeria, their mother has died. Most of them, it is their mother died in childbirth. And if a child's mother dies in childbirth, the baby has no hope. Because, number one, they can't afford formula for the baby. So that's, and nobody really wants to care. There was one baby, I knew the mother had died. I knew the father. So I was just having to ask one of my cleaners at the hospital because they were from a village near us. I said, okay, this baby, what are they doing with that baby? And she said, oh, nothing. The baby's lying on the bed there. She says, all the women, the other women around say they can't take time from their farms to look after somebody else's baby. And when they come home from the farm, they might give the baby a bit of water to drink or something, but the baby's just lying there. So they ended up bringing the baby to me, who was skin and bones, of course. And he was about a week old then. He'd managed to survive for a week. But I finally found somebody I helped her with the formula and that, and she looked after him. And he's about 8, 9 years old now. But anyway, that's the plight of babies that are born in Nigeria when their mothers die at birth. And there's a number of them because a lot of them, there's not money, and it costs money to go to a hospital or to go to a clinic to deliver. So they take the risk and they try and deliver at home, and they run into problems, and they end up losing their lives. These are widows, of course. Everywhere has widows. And a lot of these widows, I mean, there's no social welfare, there's nothing like that. So if you get old, if your kids won't take care of you, you're just left scrounging for what you can get, where you can get it. And this one woman, her husband used to work in the press. He later worked as a cashier in the hospital. She's a sweet lady, but she moved away when her husband died. He got old and he couldn't work anymore, so he moved back to his village. She has a son who works in Abuja, but the son doesn't care for her at all, doesn't send her anything. The husband died. Her daughter has, she's mentally handicapped, or however is the correct way to say it. So she doesn't help her mother at all. So her mother came to see me because I knew her. She wasn't well, so she came. So I treated her at the hospital. And she was there. She just kind of stayed around. She has some kind of a relative there that she was living with, that who I thought was feeding her okay. Anyway, I noticed that she didn't really have much for clothes. So one day I got her some material, and I gave it to her. And she said to me, she said, oh, she says, thank you very much for the material, she says. But she says, I have clothes. And she, you know, she pointed me. She did have something on her. She says, but next time, she says, please, remember, I really need food. So I thought, okay. So I went and got her some food there. But there are a lot of elderly around that just don't get cared for. There was one lady came to see me not long before I left. She lived in the village there. She just came and she was just talking about her children and her life. And, of course, she wasn't well either, so I gave her some money so that she could go to the hospital. But as she was leaving, she said to me, she says, I want to go now. She says, but before I leave, she says, would you just have a word of prayer with me? So And there are a lot of them around like that, and sometimes you get so busy that you yourself tend to forget. You know, there are these people in our midst that need attention too. Then we talked about the refugees. This family here, their house was destroyed. That's the grandmother. The mother of these two boys, she's working in the hospital. I gave her work there. The boy on the right there is the same mother. He's from the same family. These people, when Rick and John came out, they sent out some clothes. So I had some clothes. And they modeled them for me, so I took their picture. So here, these are in my kitchen, and these two guys, and there's some girls that come around. They help me a bit in the afternoon with doing this or cutting up vegetables or something so that they can get some pocket money. And there's about five of them that come around every afternoon. And they scrounge for anything. Nobody in Nigeria, their stomach ever full. And there'd be a little bit of Indomie, you know, like half a cup of Indomie left, and you'd think the first person that came in the kitchen would eat it. No. I will go in there later on and I'll see on the table, because often they don't care about dishes anyway, so there'll be five little tiny piles by the teaspoon of Indomie, five little piles there, that they've divided it for when they all get together there, then they'll eat it. Anyway, they were making cookies, and we were sending them off to the orphanage where Chelsea used to work. These were Christmas cookies. I figured, well, I'll give the kids fun, and the kids at the orphanage would enjoy eating them. Not that they know what Christmas trees are. Then sometimes that's Crystal in the background there. Sometimes she just wants to get away from the orphanage for a few days. I've got about 300 kids there. But she has 14 kids living with her in her house. So when Crystal comes, her kids come in tow. So this is one morning, we're having pancakes for breakfast. Then over on the right there, I've made some that chocolate fudge pudding. So they wanted the pan that I cooked it in. So I said, okay, you go outside. Can you imagine? Yeah, all these little kids with all their sticky fingers in the house. There's no, so you take it outside. Well, when they finished with that dish, you didn't need to wash it. This is Ben's wife, Chelsea. Because of her connection with the orphanage, now we are kind of connected with the orphanage. And they called Chelsea up and they said, we've got this little girl, Rejoice. She's almost two, but she looked like an eight-month-old baby because she was sick. She was mowing. She just had eating problems and she wasn't eating correctly. They said, please, can you take this baby for a while and get her on some kind of a system of eating so that, well, Chelsea kept her. She was very sick when she came. She had infection. She had malaria. So she was treated. Then Chelsea kept her for about 6 weeks, figuring out, you know, how we could get this child to eat. And right now, she went back to the orphanage, and she's just a chubby little girl running around. You never know that she was this girl at this time. Okay, this is a picture. Crystal came with her kids at Christmas time, too.
And Crystal's
the
girl from?
Crystal is Chelsea's cousin. Yes, she's from, yes. She's actually, I think her parents are from...
Down Pennsylvania.
She's in Pennsylvania, yes. Yeah, I think, were they Mennonites or something? Her family might be in assembly, but she's not in an assembly. Okay, maybe, but I haven't got that connection from her. But okay, but then she's been in Nigeria for so long. Okay, and then my kids in my kitchen made cookies at Valentine's to send over to them. Last year, we got a call from the orphanage again one day. Said, look, please, they brought two babies. I suppose my time's gone. They brought two babies to the orphanage. Their mothers died 2 days ago. We don't have any, they call them mothers, in the orphanage there that can take these two small babies. They've all got so many kids. Could you please take them and kind of get them going, get them on their feet in a few months and send them back? So Chelsea came to see me about it. I said, okay. I said, you take one, I'll take one. So we went to the orphanage to pick them up. Chelsea's was called Israel. The one I had was called Muhammad. Oh, what kind of a war are they trying to start here? We've got these two-day-old babies. We've got an Israeli and we've got a Muslim baby. Anyway, I couldn't see myself calling a two-day-old baby Muhammad. So I called him Prince for while he was with me. So I sent Prince back when he was about 6 months old because it was hard for me with all the other work I was doing. And the girls that were around, when they were on holiday, they could take the baby while I was working at the hospital, but then they had to go back to school. And I realized I could not keep this baby forever, as much as I wanted to. and we were getting very attached. And I thought, the longer I keep him, okay, give him back any time, it's going to be hard for me, but it's going to get even more harder for him, because the way they treat them, the way they've grown up at the orphanage, is not like it would be in our house. So I had to take him back. But Chelsea kept her. She kept Israel, and Israel is still with her and Ben. And the next one, please. Okay, the school. I've had for a long time a desire for a school there, because the school system is so bad, and I've had so many people come to me. The youth in the town who are, it's Muslim or pagan, they came, they called me down there a few years ago and said, look, we need a school, please. We can see what you're doing at the hospital, please start a school for us. I said, I can't with my work at the hospital. And that was before mum and dad went to glory and all the Bible school and the printing work landed on my plate too. I said, I can't do it. He said, yes, you can. You can just send to your country and people bring people here to do it. I said, it does not work like that. Anyway, so it kind of fell through. But then Chelsea is a teacher. So when she came to ICA, she'd be no longer working at the orphanage, of course, and she was trying to think, what could she do there at ICA? So we prayed about it, and of course, the school, the idea of the school came. Before Chelsea came, this girl you can see there, Teresa, she would have about 40 kids, different ages, every afternoon from 3 to 5, and the trees under around her house in the afternoons, and she would be giving them lessons, and they would be learning more in that time, the whole bunch of them there, than what they ever got in the school. So she's going to be number one on the list of teachers when the school actually gets done. So I said to Teresa, look, the big hall is up there that we use for camp. Why don't you have your kids come up there? So they started meeting there. Next one, please. This is, we were trying to think what building, where we would have it, and there was no finances to start building from scratch for a school. So we had the, there was an abandoned building for missionaries up on a hill behind our place. That just shows the contrast between the dry season and the dry season on the bottom and the rainy season up there. You can see the grass and no grass. Anyway, there was a lot of work. The house has been standing there. Hailstones had dealt with the roof. And, of course, it was a person's house, so there were small rooms inside there. So they didn't have the finances for doing much there. So Ben said, well, at least I can start pulling things apart. It doesn't cost money to pull things apart. So he took out the old windows, and he was breaking down walls where they were going to have to build up and adjust. So he saved the box that he could. You see in the last picture there. So that they could start doing some building. And they actually did get a gift last month. So now they're working on getting some supplies so that they can see how far they can go with getting the building going. And we hope, we're expecting my brothers and their wives out in the fall, and that maybe by then the school, there'll be enough school so they can at least start doing some teaching in the school there. But the interesting thing is, the next one please, Teresa knew that this work was going on, that the school was there. So in January, I saw all the kids from her classes there going up the hill. And I thought, what on earth are they doing up the hill? Did they go up to get, you know, to collect something from on the hill? They all came back down again. So when I saw Teresa, I said, what did all the kids go up on the hill for? She said, well, they heard that there was a school being built for them up there. So they all decided they wanted to go and see the school. Well, incidentally, once they saw the school, that's their school. They won't go to the auditorium anymore. This is where they meet, inside the school, with all the broken walls, no windows in it. You can see they put a plank across two blocks there to sit on. Others brought chairs from the house. These kids are just sitting on pieces of broken blocks, because that's their school, that's where they're going to have their classes. So that is a project that we value prayer for, is getting the whole thing organized and finding teachers that actually have a heart to teach the kids something that is going to help them in life, not just scholastically. I told when the guys met me, called me down to the town to talk to me, I said, look, we have a school, you know it's going to be a Christian school. They said, it doesn't matter. I mean, they were all Muslims. And just asking them that, they knew what it would entail. It's going to be a Christian school. They said, we want our kids to have a better future than what you have in our life now. Next one, please. The hospital. This is just a road going down to the hospital. And those are some of the hospital buildings. We have, I have two Nigerian doctors there and about 70 Nigerian staff, no nurses, because nurses, no nurse wants to come and work in a rural place like this. And also, we could never afford to pay them what they want to be paid. So it's mostly auxiliaries that we have there. Next one, please. Okay, this is just another view of the buildings at the hospital. There is a waiting room in front of us. The next one, we'll go through this fast because I've run out of time. Another picture. Okay, obviously the tractor, the lawnmower, was broken, so the grass is rather overgrown, which is a problem because of snakes. It's a serious problem. But we still keep trying. We have a lot of TB patients, and we've been recognized over the years because they started with TB way back, and most people do not want to treat TB. Most hospitals, clinics don't want to treat TB. When they come, we have them stay for 2 months for their intensive phase because we want to make sure that they take their drugs as they're supposed to take them, and a lot of them have other sicknesses that need to be treated too. So they stay with us for the first 2 months. Then they'll be going back and forth. They'll come back for follow-up. They'll be given specified times when they have to come for follow-up, if it's for another time for an x-ray or for a blood test. So these, we have individual rooms. The next one, please. There's some more rooms for TB patients. Right in the back there underneath that tree, there's a building there, and that's our chapel on the TB compound. And there's one guy, actually he's a second in command after me in the hospital there, and he has devotions with the TB patients every night. Faithfully, every night he has devotions with them, and he comes to me, you know, and he's come to me a number of times and said that patients have come to him and said, "I thank God I got TB because I got Christ by coming here and spending the time and hearing the gospel over and over every day." Next one. Okay, this is our lab and x-ray. Next one. Oh, this is just some of the lab tests going on in the lab. Next one. Our TB program. The drugs are provided by the government. So the drugs are free, and everybody has their box of drugs with their name on it that they will be given out of when they come back for follow-up. You go to their box and you get them out. We also, along with TB, you have a lot of patients with HIV, AIDS, and we have our heart-to-heart center. And just recently, a non-profit organization, for the past couple of years, is supporting us with treatment for HIV AIDS patients. So we're very thankful for that too. I think we have about 100 enrolled now, when I left. This is inside our surgery. We do a variety. This is a woman's ward. It's another picture of it. Next one. You can see when they come in, they bring somebody with them. They do their own meals there. And they come in, they bring their own containers for their water. They do their own cooking there. But they have a bed for their treatment. Next one. This is in the maternity. I renovated it last year. So it's got the pink walls. Again, pink walls. But incidentally, those are twins. The one all dressed up nicely in pink is the boy. So really, color doesn't have any connotations to them there. This is inside the male ward. And you see the calendar hanging inside? This is inside the nurse's station. This one's taken from. You see the calendar there that some ladies do, calendars, the 12 months, and then they stick a picture on it with a scripture verse. And they're very popular because you can't get calendars in Nigeria. And when we get them at Christmas time, we give all of our patients get a calendar, the staff gets a calendar, Bible school will get a calendar, and sometimes we can send them out, if they're enough, we can send them out to some of the conferences so that the people in the villages can have them, because you just can't get calendars. Next one. Okay, this is just in a couple of the other wards in the hospital there. Yes. So I think so, yes, because we're over time. Sorry. Okay. Our God and Heavenly Father, we thank you for this opportunity. We thank you for the opportunity to show to others what you have going on in Nigeria there. And we know that it's not only Nigeria, there are many other places in the world. We just thank you, Father. We thank you for the concern and the prayers of people over here praying for what's going on.
We just ask that you will be with them here, bless them, be with us for the rest of this day. In your son's name, amen. Sorry.
Yes. And there's a high birth rate population, so God is going to die, and they need to die.